Welcome back to the California Work Comp Report. Today we're joining Dr. John Alchemy and Professor Bruce Bullen, PhD, in a presentation on pulmonary function testing. This is an audio adaptation of a video that the two had presented back in September. So you'll hear them referencing some tables and charts. So if you're interested in seeing the video along with the tables and charts, we'll link it in the description of the podcast app that you're using to listen to this episode. And without further ado, here's the presentation.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. John Alchemy with RateFast. We're here today to do a video tutorial on pulmonary function testing, what it is, how it's used in workers' compensation, how it's used in AMA Guides, 5th edition ratings in California. And joining me is Dr. Bruce Bullen from the Department of Physics at Hamline University. Hey, Bruce.
How are you doing?
Great. So let's move on to that next slide, and we're going to go through the learning goals. And so today in our presentation, we're going to talk particularly about a couple of things. We want to talk, first of all, about some of the anatomy and physiology of normal and diseased lung tissues and what that means for pulmonary function testing. We want to learn what a pulmonary function test is on a very basic level. And we come into these tests when we have a pulmonary case. It could be COVID, it could be asthma, it could be aspergillosis, it could be an infection, it could be anything, really. Pulmonary function tests are the main way of determining objective findings for impairment rating. So it's a pretty important test, and I think it's a good one to review here. Next, we want to learn about what the PFT actually measures, and we'll be going through that in something called the pulmonary flow loop. And then we want to talk a little bit about how the pulmonary flow loop or the pulmonary function test can tell us the difference between normal and diseased lungs and what type of diseased lungs we're looking at. So that's very helpful as well to be able to make that distinguishing determination. And then finally, in the fifth part of the presentation, we will learn how these pulmonary function tests are translated into AMA guides results, and how the whole person impairment is created and turned into the insurance company and the judicial system for claim settlement. All right, we'll move on to that next slide. And here we have a picture out of the AMA guides. And this is just a really basic, simple look at the way that the lung tissue is designed. I have a little pointer here. This is normal lung tissue, and you can see that the thickness of the bronchioles and the alveoli are nice and even here. They have a consistent flexibility throughout. They expand and contract in a very predictable way, and in a way that we'll consider normal in the pulmonary function test when we get there. And then we can look at the other disease processes like asthma. Asthma is a little bit different because it's a reversible airway disease. And you can see that this is a disease of the small airways, the bronchioles, and this tissue here is muscular. And so that tends to get contracted. And then there's mucus and all kinds of things fun and interesting that develop there. But notice the little alveoli air sacs out here in asthma are pretty much normal. Okay, so keep that in mind. So this is more of a reactive airway disease, more of the smaller bronchioles that lead into that. Next is fibrosis, and fibrosis can be caused by all kinds of things. We won't get into the long list of the differential. However, just notice here that at the interface where the air coming into the lung is exchanged across the alveoli to get into the bloodstream, okay? And here we have a thickening or a scarring, if you want to think about that. So fibrosis tends to make the lung tissue stiff. So it wants to contract faster and it's harder to stretch. All right. And then in our fourth disease state here, we have emphysema. And emphysema is where the tissue down in the alveoli get thinned out. And because of this, you can see that there's some thinning of the elastic tissue here and here. And then also out at the alveoli, these are actually destroyed and become very thin. And that causes the tissue to overexpand and also trap air as these walls are less stiff when the lung is exhaling and you're pushing out, this force inside the intrathoracic cavity actually collapses these little areas that they have in the dots, and it traps air in out in here in the alveoli. And that's called air trapping. And you see that on a chest x-ray because the diaphragms become flat when there's a bunch of air trapped in your chest. So anyway, that's the normal and disease states. And next, Bruce is going to be talking to us about spirometry made simple.
All right, thank you. So to try to understand the physics of how spirometry works, we'll answer the questions outlined here. One, what is spirometry? Two, what measurements are made? Three, how is the data displayed? And four, what diseases are diagnosed with it? So, what exactly is spirometry? Spirometry refers to a common type of breathing test that is used to measure an individual's ability regarding pulmonary function. In particular, spirometry experiments involve measurements related to both the total volume of air expelled and the volume flow rate during exhalation. Now, how is the spirometry test performed? In spirometry testing, the patient inhales maximally, then exhales as quickly as possible and continues to exhale for as long as possible, typically for several seconds. This provides volume versus time data, which can be used to determine the standard flow volume loops, as we will soon see. Now, what are the most important quantities measured in spirometry testing? First, we have FEV1. FEV itself stands for the forced expiratory volume, with FEV1 referring to the volume of air an individual can forcefully exhale in the first second. Next, we have FVC, which stands for forced vital capacity. This refers to the total volume of air an individual can exhale voluntarily. Finally, the ratio of these two values, FEV1 divided by FVC, refers to the fraction of the total air volume that could be exhaled that actually is exhaled in the first second. Note that this ratio is related to the volume flow rate of air during exhalation. So, how is the relevant data displayed? Spirometry data is typically displayed using the standard flow volume loop, with a sketch of such a loop shown. Please note that, as shown here, zero lung volume is typically on the right-hand side of the graph, so that increases in lung volume correspond to moving to the left. Also, the flow rate is defined to be positive, that is, above the volume axis in this sketch, during exhalation, and negative during inhalation. Let's consider the cyclic process shown going clockwise from the far right, where the lungs are as depleted as possible and there is no airflow. This volume is called the residual volume, labeled RV. There are four main legs to this cyclic process. Leg one, the patient inhales as much as possible until the peak inspiratory flow rate is reached. Leg two, the patient continues to inhale until the total lung capacity, labeled TLC, is reached, and again, there is no airflow. Leg three, the patient forcefully exhales until the peak expiratory flow rate is achieved. And finally, leg four, the patient continues to exhale until the residual volume is reached and the airflow returns to zero. Note that FEV1 is not directly shown on the flow volume loop, but is determined from the original volume versus time data mentioned previously. Together with the FVC shown here, all three key measurements, FEV1, FVC, and the ratio FEV1 to FVC are now known. It should be noted that spirometry itself only measures changes in volume, so other tests must be performed to determine the actual residual volume and total lung capacity, but the differences between these quantities, the FVC is determined with spirometry. Finally, What types of diseases are diagnosed with spirometry? Many obstructive and restrictive diseases, such as emphysema and pulmonary fibrosis, respectively, can be diagnosed using spirometry. As shown in this sketch, one aspect of obstructive diseases is that the residual volume is larger than normal, while it is smaller than normal with restrictive diseases. Note that, as demonstrated in these sketches, the heights of the flow volume loops are typically lower with pulmonary diseases, as such diseases tend to reduce how forcefully one can breathe, thereby reducing both the peak expiratory and inspiratory flow rates. It should also be noted that, in the case of restrictive diseases, the flow volume loop is essentially a mini version of a normal loop, but shifted to the right, that is, toward smaller lung volumes. Now, John will talk about how this relates to impairment rating.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. That was very helpful. Hopefully that was clear. And again, since you're watching this on a video, feel free to go back and recheck it and listen to areas that were confusing. It is a little confusing the first couple times getting your head around peak flows and in the way that the scores for the lung volumes and so forth are marked out in the chart. So keep that in mind and go back and look at that as many times as you need to. Now, I wanted to take over and say, once we have these values, we want to determine what the impairment rating is. And we talk in other videos about impairment rating and whole person impairment and all that. But the point here we want to address tonight are what measurements in that flow loop are we now going to translate into impairment, and how is that done? The common way in the AMA guides to do impairment ratings, one method is to have a table just like this. And the table, as you can see, has different classes of severity. Typically, class one is the normal or nearest normal severity. And then we have class two, three, and four, with four being the most severely diseased or highest value for the impairment rating. Now, Bruce had talked about FVC, forced vital capacity, and he also talked about FEV1, the amount of air that you can expel in the first second of expiration, forceful rapid expiration. So those are the two main drivers of the impairment rating on this table. Now, for a class one, if you're normal, you get a 0% whole person impairment, basically no problem at all. But once you start to get into the class two, now you can see that the AMA guides has limits. So they want you somewhere between normal and 60% of expected. So this is greater than 60% predicted and lower than the lower limit of normal. So as we move across here, you can see that the individual loses more and more of their FVC volume until they're down to less than 50% of their expected prediction. And remember, the normals are based on a bunch of people doing pulmonary function tests on normal individuals and related to gender and age as well. FEV1 is, like I said, that first second and how much air you can move out of there. And you can see here, it's basically the same, equal to or less than 60% of predicted normal and less than the lower limit of normal. And so, again, it basically goes out to the right. Now, there is a range of whole person impairment for each class, 10 to 25%, 26-50, and 51 to 100. When we're placing someone in the class, you might ask, how do we pick a number between, like, let's say class four, 51 to 100%? There is a controlling table at the beginning of the AMA guides called the Activities of Daily Living. It's on page four. And basically what the evaluator does is they've interviewed the individual. They find out what things they have difficulty with. Usually in pulmonary cases, it's things like sleeping, problems with exertional work like lifting, or standing and walking. Those are kind of the main things that will make a determination on choosing a number between 51 and 100, for instance, in a class four. So that number is basically adjusted based on the impact of the activities of daily living. And that's basically how this table works. And you can see that when you are doing a class one rating here, both of these elements need to be normal, FEV1 and FVC and FEV1, excuse me. And you can say that there's an and. Once you get into class two, you only need one to determine. And so that could be either FVC, for instance, but maybe your FEV1, your FVC is a class two, your FEV1 is a class three. Well, you can certainly assign and should assign the class three, because the injured individual always gets the benefit of the higher rating when there's an option. And so these two values, they can be slightly different in their severity, and they rate independently as we go across the table. All right. And that will conclude the section on our AMA rating applications of the pulmonary function test. Bruce, let's go on and look at what we learned. Excellent. So just to recap, what did we do? We learned that lung tissue, it can be normal, it can be stiff, or it can be really thin and loose, fibrotic or emphysematous. Next, we learned that the pulmonary function test has key elements for impairment rating, and we talked about forced vital capacity and FEV1, and then the ratio of those two. Number three, we learned diseased lungs show differences in the lung volumes. And remember that we had that slide, and go back and look at it if you want. The green was normal. And then we had the fibrotic lung that was out to the right, and the emphysematous lung that was out to the left. And remember that you shift to the right and left of normal based on the quality of the lung tissue because of the dynamics of the air inhalation and exhalation that it creates. So, and then finally, we learned about the impairment rating and using those two elements of FVC and FEV1 to determine on the table the severity of loss, which is ultimately turned into a whole person impairment value and delivered to all the stakeholders so they can create a settlement value for the injured worker.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to know more about pulmonary function testing, visit our blog at blog.rate-fast.com. And if you'd like to try the RateFast Express Workers' Compensation Impairment Report Writing Service, visit rate-fast.com. And if you have any questions or comments about our podcast, feel free to email us at caworkcompreport@rate-fast.com.